Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at newbalance.com. Hey there, it's Gary Parrish. Wednesday, March 30th, 2022. Welcome back to the CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball Podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting, dodo birds, and Leaky Black. Matt Norlander is here with me. If you're watching live on YouTube, please smash the like button like you're Brandon Davies. You have consent. And if you haven't subscribed to the YouTube channel yet, shame on you. And I hope your life is cursed. Like, I've been begging you since November. Enough is enough.
No. Hold on, GP.
You're getting ridiculous.
Hold on. Now, listen, this episode in particular is going out to a wide swath of people that might not be as familiar with it. So hello to those people. And two, listen, we need like only a few hundred more to get us to 6,000 by the night of the title game. So if you have not done already, please go subscribe to the YouTube channel. We want to be at 6K by the time that game tips off Monday.
Okay, let me rephrase. If you're new here, I don't hope your life is cursed. I welcome you with open arms. I give you a little hug. And I would ask you respectfully if you could please subscribe to the YouTube channel. For the rest of you, though, the ones who have been here the whole time, you're the ones I'm talking to. Let the record show that Norlander has arrived in New Orleans for the 2022 Final Four. I'm going to be heading that way first thing tomorrow morning. National semifinals that's set for Saturday. Deadleg, I know you ain't been there long, but how's New Orleans? You seen any Instagram models or anything else awesome yet?
All right, a couple things. First of all, do I need to be aware of any Instagram model situation? Is this in reference to anything? Or are we thinking that just Instagram models are going to be flocking here because of the Final Four is here?
Yeah, I'm just always operating under the assumption that big events are going to have Instagram models, and I look for them.
No, I have not. Two,
okay.
We're a little punk rock on this podcast right now. Thankfully, I was able to get in and check into the hotel, the same hotel you'll be staying at, and the same hotel that Nada theoretically will be sleeping in. However, Nada is producing this podcast right now from the lobby of the hotel on the Wi-Fi. We had to get to make sure we got this up Wednesday afternoon. Hello to everyone watching live. We appreciate you. But Nada could not get, they don't have, I don't know. I don't understand how they had a room ready for me and many other people that checked in about an hour ago. And then suddenly Nada shows up and they don't have a room. Not cool
with
that.
Well, hey, I know one big difference between you and Nada. Oh, I'm just throwing it out.
I don't matter.
I'm just throwing it out there.
Nada's the best. Can't wait to actually meet Nada in person for the first time. That's going to happen on this trip there. And so, yes, anyway, New Orleans is good. It is windy as all hell, by the way. Got in. Flight was okay. Not too bumpy, but the winds are heavy right now.
You don't even know. Do you know my kids are home from school today because of the wind? I never heard of such a thing. You get to stay home because of the wind? They texted us last night. They were like, we're going to let the kids out of school early. And I was like, let's just don't even make it. Like, my little guy's school is like 25 minutes from our house. And I'm like, we're not driving in 25 minutes to be in pre-K for 2 hours and then coming and then got to go back and get him again. Just stay at home. So my little guy stayed at home all day today because of the wind.
Wow.
That's where we're at.
That's really something. But yeah, apparently it's going to be serious storms here later in New Orleans, so hopefully everything remains as good as it possibly can be before that system moves through. But yo, New Orleans is certainly ready for you, GP, and it feels great to be back here. I have not been to New Orleans since the last time we were all here, 2012. Kentucky wins over Kansas in that Final Four, and obviously I can't wait to experience the next few days on the ground, but this is a city with a very rich history of Final Fours being played here going back decades.
Oh, it's like you read my notes, Deadleg. Believe it or not, this is going to be the sixth Final Four in New Orleans, but just the first since 2012. You know, the Superdome, which is now the Caesars Superdome, by the way, it opened in 1975. It's mostly associated with football. Saints games, Super Bowls, Sugar Bowls,
college football title games, but basically every big event you can think of has also been held in that building. Everybody has played there, from the Rolling Stones to Prince, Paul McCartney, Guns N' Roses, David Bowie, U2, Pink Floyd, Taylor Swift, Beyonce by herself, Beyonce with Destiny's Child, Beyonce with Jay-Z, Pope John Paul II spoke there, Muhammad Ali fought there. The No Mas fight between Ray Leonard and
Roberto, was it really
held in the Superdome? Republican National Convention held there in 1988. WrestleMania has been there twice. I mean,
this has got strong Superdome Wikipedia vibes at the moment right now.
That's all straight from Wikipedia. Okay. And yes, some of college basketball's biggest moments have also happened inside the Superdome. You ready for this? Tell me if you knew all this stuff.
Okay.
New Orleans is where Michael Jordan made the shot.
Yes.
To get North Carolina's Dean Smith his first title back in 1982.
Trivia time. How much time on the clock?
11 seconds.
16 seconds when Mike Jordan at the time hit the shot. It's believed to be the shot that transformed him from Mike to Michael.
I don't even know how that works, by the way. How does hitting a shot change your name?
He was, because when you actually hear the play-by-play, Mike Jordan. And then I think then he got to be a bigger star and people started to realize he actually preferred to go by Michael. So I think that, yeah. I don't think when the ball went through the hoop, I don't think it was that exact moment. But when he was a freshman, he was Mike Jordan.
Like, apply that anywhere else. Like, imagine it's a baseball player. It's like, Bryce Harper hits a home run to win a World Series game. And Bryce Harper's like, and that's when I became Joey Harper. It's like, what? How did your name change when you did something? It doesn't make any sense to me. The Superdome is where Indiana's Bob Knight won his third and last national title in 1987. It's where Michigan's Chris Webber called the timeout in 1993, which propelled Dean Smith to his second title. It's where Carmelo Anthony got Syracuse's Jim Boeheim his only title in 2003. And like you mentioned, it is where Anthony Davis got Kentucky's John Calipari his only title back in 2012. A lot of great college basketball history in New Orleans. At least two of the most iconic moments in college basketball history happened in that dome. That's the Michael Jordan game winner. You got three. Chris Webber, timeout. What's the third?
Oh, four. Four. Jordan?
Mm-hmm.
Keith Smart hitting the shot with a second to go to beat Cues is definitely up there.
Sure.
Weber, and then Hakeem Warwick's block to seal it against Kansas. Definitely up there.
Hakeem Warwick's block is in the conversation.
Without a doubt. Four iconic plays. Then the most recent Final Four that we were in the building for, it was just a dominant Kentucky performance. And really, UK fans I know are kind of split between, was the 2012 team or the 2015 team the more dominant one? Kentucky not participating in this Blue Blood Final Four, but there wasn't really a huge moment from that one 10 years ago. But certainly it was also a glitterati, if you will, because you also had Louisville, Blue Blood, considering. We'll get there in a second, by the way, and then Ohio State being the other one, and that program in and of itself is plenty to brag about. So New Orleans has been gifted with a lot of good endings and a lot of really star-studded program, big-time schools at its Final Fours over the years. Funny how that works out. They should really hold Final Fours here more frequently than every 10 to 12 years, in my opinion.
I don't like it.
What?
Too much going on.
No, stop.
It's too much happening.
We'll find out, huh?
I need places that say, GP, there ain't nothing else to do here. It's time to go home.
Is this the best the podcast is going to be for the remainder of the season, my man?
This is the right best here? I'm going to be for the remainder of the season. This is the freshest you're going to see me for the rest of the season.
My man's had 2 days of lead-up time. He's just, waist deep in the Wikipedia for the Superdome. He's good to go for a solid hour here. From after this, well, we'll just kind of take it as it comes.
Look at me. I got a nice night's sleep last night, shaved. I'm fresh. This is it. It's over for me. Next time you see me, I'm going to be like, I think Bill Self's got one national title. It's going to be tough for me, but I'll be all right. Let's get to this weekend's festivities. What an awesome Final Four. Kansas, Villanova, Duke, Carolina, three Hall of Fame coaches and a first-year coach, four programs with a combined 17 NCAA tournament titles. North Carolina's got six in five different decades. Duke's got five in three different decades. Kansas got three in three different decades. Villanova has three in two different decades. These four Final Four teams have combined for 61 Final Four berths and 17 national championships. Roughly 21% of all NCAA tournaments ever have been won by one of these four schools, including seven of the past 13. Bottom line, and I can't stress this enough, if you're one of the nerds who tweeted me and said that you're bored by this Final Four, which will, among other things, include the first NCAA tournament meeting ever between Duke and North Carolina in what also happens to be Mike Krzyzewski's final season on the sideline. Like, if you're really one of the people who tweeted me and said that, you're a miserable person. Twitter is a miserable place, and you're one of the people who make it that way. Shame on you. Dead leg, here's my question for you.
Yeah.
I tweeted the other night that this is a Final Four featuring four blue bloods, and immediately people tried to tell me, no, 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 Villanova is not a blue blood. My response to that is more or less, go argue about it on Facebook. I don't care. But I do care what you think. So do you have an opinion on whether Villanova is a blue blood or not?
I actually do have an opinion on this. I saw, you know, our friend Bomani Jones tweeted out earlier in the week, there are six blue bloods, Kentucky, Carolina, Duke, UCLA, Kansas, and Indiana. He said the rest are nouveau riche, which is another way of saying, you know, new money. You know, not traditional, not inherited wealth, if you will. But I reject the premise here. And I think, and it's not just Bomani, but Bomani's obviously a superstar in media, and he knows what he's talking about and knows Duke, Carolina, college basketball altogether. But I do reject the premise that there was some sort of timeline that began back in like the 50s or 60s where these schools were handed down this title by the basketball gods, and rings were carved out of lava from the mountains and the volcanoes, and they're the only ones. That's not how it works. Because you know what? If podcasts existed in the year 1990 and we were talking about teams that were blue bloods, you know who would not be on that list? Duke did not have a national title at that point. It was a really, really good program. In fact, in some ways, not always, this isn't an exact analogy here, Duke was a lot like Gonzaga at that point. It had been good for a very long time. It had not broken through. Mike Krzyzewski was not Coach K at that point. So my whole premise with this is, when did we decide when the blue blood situation became those six specific schools? Why is there suddenly this cutoff and no one gets to join it? That's just frankly not how it is. Because you know what? UCLA wasn't awesome until John Wooden got there. There were no blue bloods in the year 1964, I guess. It has to start at some point. And so long as we don't, you know, kill off our planet, we're going to be playing the sport for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. Do you mean to tell me 150 years from now, it's only going to be those six schools? Of course not. This will evolve and it will grow. So last year, or 2 years ago, when the dumbest pandemic of our lifetimes
hit. Never seen one like this, Deadleg.
I spent an offseason essentially researching 100-plus programs and everything they had ever done. There weren't games to prepare for. Like, we had a lot of free time, and we had content that we had to fill that machine. So I went about trying to figure out, all right, historically, from a statistical and an achievement standpoint, what are the best programs in the history of men's college basketball? And so what I did was I combined a number of factors. And we talked about this on a podcast after I did it, but to refresh your memory, I assigned point values to certain things. And so the most was if you had NCAA tournament titles, but also Final Four appearances without a title. You also got points for that. Regular season titles, conference titles, Elite Eight runs, you know, NBA draft picks, NCAA tournament bids, wins over ranked teams, wins a week spent as a ranked team, all this stuff. Your total wins, your total losses, all of it went into a whole big pile. And I counted it up. And you know what? Here was the top 10 when I did that list. And I got plenty more coming on why Nova's a blue blood, by the way. Here was the top 10 then. Kentucky was one. Carolina was two. Duke was three. UCLA was four. Kansas was five. Louisville was six. Indiana was seven. UConn was eight. Villanova was nine. And Cincinnati was 10. I'm not going to stand here and make the case that Cincinnati is an absolute blue blood. But the other nine, yes. And in fact, if I actually applied the same exact formula and updated it with this season's results, Villanova would actually be ahead of UConn, even before we know if it's going to win a national title or not. And even though right now UConn sits with one more national championship than Villanova. If you want to make a case against UConn, I kind of get it, because once Jim Calhoun got there, he completely changed the program, and it has been really, really good as of late. But at Villanova, I just don't think you have a case, man. Right now, here's the deal. I think there's got to be a few different things that have to set the parameters for if you're a national championship blue blood level kind of program. One, it's how many Final Fours have you been to? Nova's been to seven. Carolina has the most with 21. Then you got UCLA, Kentucky, and Duke. You know, they're creeping up just a few behind, 17 apiece. Kansas has 16. Indiana has 8. I think Louisville's got 9 or 10. One was vacated, and then Louisville's sitting there with 7. You also have to have at least 3 national championships, and that Villanova does. UCLA leads the way, of course, with 11. Kentucky has 8. UNC has 6. Duke has 5. Indiana has 5. UConn has 4. Kansas and Villanova have 3. I would put Louisville in that group as well. It has 3 when you include the vacated one under Patino, and then that's the list basically. Also, Villanova's won national championships with separate coaches. It hasn't been the one coach that's done it. That Duke can't actually claim the same. Now, Duke was good before Coach K got there. Shouts to Vic Bubas, of course. But this idea that you can't evolve and elevate to the blue blood conversation to me is just not accurate. Villanova's also 9th all time in NCAA tournament wins. It's been a staple of the NCAA tournament for essentially almost 4 decades. And I think another thing that actually helps Villanova's case in this spot, GP, first of all, I love the fact that this Final Four isn't just a blue blood Final Four. It's also a basketball first Final Four. Carolina, Kansas, Duke, and Nova. Sorry, Kentucky fans.
Kentucky doesn't go to the Final Four.
Kentucky fans got to be like, actually, Kentucky fans got to be like hating life at the moment right now because, you know, not involved in this. It's 10 years since you won your last one and all that kind of stuff. But the point I'm making here is that Duke, Carolina, Kansas, Villanova all put a priority on basketball over football. And not only, Villanova is a true, it's in a basketball-only conference. It doesn't even have Division I high-level football the way that the other 3 schools do. So all of that, plus the fact that it's coached by a Hall of Fame coach, it won it in the 80s, which is, you know, considered the greatest, most influential, most impactful, important decade in the history of the sport. I could keep going on and on and on, but that's basically it. Villanova is a blue blood. I don't think it's just those 6. Villanova 7. I think Louisville's in there for 8. And then UConn, to me, is the one where it's like, what do we want to do with this? Now, it did win titles with separate coaches. Kevin Ollie did win a national championship with Calhoun's roster there. If UConn fans want to make the case, I'm certainly here to hear it. But Villanova's success, Villanova was also in the very first Final Four ever. So I don't want to hear this like they're late to the party. Literally the first NCAA tournament, they didn't have 68 or 64 or 32 teams in it. Kind of a small field. But Villanova went to the very first Final Four. It made one in the 70s. It made one in the 80s. And then obviously it's had this run under Jay Wright. I don't think there's an argument against it. We don't have to have 6 traditional blue bloods, and that's the only one. Duke had to eventually get there, and it had to win to do it. And I think that Villanova has done it to this point. I actually think this Final Four appearance, GP, is really what solidifies it. It got to it again. A national championship, I already think the conversation's done, but then it's really, really, really done. And that's all I got.
You sure?
Vicini just texted me and said, this is the longest you've ever talked on the podcast consecutively. So I'm shutting up. This idea that you can't be a blue blood because you weren't this elite program before 1994. Who's deciding these arbitrary cutoffs? That's all.
Yeah. I forfeited the right years ago to ever get upset about somebody else talking too much. So like, do your thing.
Last thing, I was going to write a column about this, but frankly, I got a Coach K thing going up tomorrow. I just didn't have the time. So I did a U. I kind of saved it for the podcast. And so I had it all in the bucket, my man.
For what it's worth, CBS and Turner sent out an email earlier today announcing some stuff. And it was titled this way: Blue Bloods, Duke, Kansas, North Carolina, and Villanova to headline 2022 Division I Men's Basketball Final Four in New Orleans. So at least the people putting together the press releases, they call him Villanova a blue blood. 3 national titles, 2 different coaches, 2 different decades. Been in 16 of the past 17 NCAA tournaments. Conference championship in 7 of the past 9 seasons. Been operating at an extremely high level for most of the past 20 years. One definition I saw earlier today when I was looking for a definition for a blue blood as it pertains to sports is to, and this is a simple definition, but it said to have a track record of winning. Isn't a 20-year track record long enough? If so, I'd argue Villanova is a blue blood. And if Gonzaga ever gets a stupid national title, I'll start trying to make
it's going to be hard for Gonzaga to get into that if it's not in a power conference. And I, you know, whatever, we don't have to go down the Gonzaga route, but there will people that will might actually literally die on that hill before they call Gonzaga blue blood. So,
by the way, this will be just the 2nd Final Four with 2 coaches with multiple national titles. That's a fact.
Do you know? I don't know. I can't. Do you know the other one?
Trivia time. What other Final Four had two coaches with multiple Final Fours? I mean, with multiple national championships.
That's happened before.
Yeah, that's
almost a regular occurrence.
What All other right. Final Four has had two coaches in it that had multiple national titles when they were coaching in it? You know what? You're not going to get it.
I got it.
You'd really
it's got it. It's 2011. No, 2010 Duke won it. Damn it. It's not 2011.
Just give me the decade.
Hold on. I got to think. All right. So first of all, I got to go every Duke title. So just because K has five. So 91, it's Roy.
Let me stop you.
Let me talk through this?
It's got nothing to do with Duke. I'm just fast forwarding.
It's okay. So Duke is not involved whatsoever.
Nope.
Fine.
Let me help you.
And 91 wouldn't have applied anyway. Okay. So it's not Duke. Self doesn't have multiple. Let's see here. 17. No. 18. No, because Jay didn't have two at that point. You want a decade, my man. Multiple national championships. Dean didn't even get a second until the 90s. So 93, we're looking at. 93, we're looking at Carolina. Michigan was a no.
Let me help you. No, you're on the wrong path.
Okay. And I'm not looking at the chat because the chat's probably put it in here already. So I want to get this organically. Let's see, multiple titles. So, how about this? Is Wooden involved in this?
No.
Okay. I figured he wouldn't be because there weren't that many people that would have won a national championship multiple at that point. All right. Give me a hint. Damn it. I don't want to keep the listeners late.
1950s is where you need to go.
Get the hell out of here, my man. So we're talking San Francisco.
Nope.
We're talking Ohio State.
Nope. This is back when Kentucky used to win national titles.
So this is Adolph Rupp, and then...
it is a man who has a building named after
him. Bill Henderson.
It should have been Bill Henderson. It's not. There's a basketball arena named after this guy.
In the 50s.
He coached.
So
Adolph Rupp had two at this point, and another coach in the Final Four had two at this point as well. He has a building named after him.
Fog Allen?
Nope.
Didn't think so.
Same conference, though.
Same comp. I feel like Dick Harp.
It's not Dick Harp.
Bill Henderson, Dick Harp, Fog Allen. I'm striking out. Oh, man. Who else we got in the Big 12? Hold on. Let me go through this. Not Oklahoma. Oh, frickin' A, man. Hank Iba.
That's right. Henry Iba.
Okay.
Adolph Rupp had two. Henry Iba had two.
That's sneaky good. That trivia question is sneaky good. How about that?
And Adolph Rupp ended up – Kentucky won the title that year, so Rupp got his third title year.
I just saw the chat. Everyone's saying Iba. Yeah.
Mike Krzyzewski, by the way, if you're into this kind of stuff, is trying to become just the second coach to win seven NCAA tournament titles. Jay Wright trying to become just the seventh coach to win at least three. The other coaches with at least three right now, John Wooden's got 10, Coach K's got five, Adolph Rupp finished with four, Roy Williams, Jim Calhoun, Bob Knight got three each. Bill Self trying to become just the 16th coach to win at least two national titles. So, listen, a lot of people have won, including Kevin Ollie. Only 15 people have two, and only six people have three. So, Jay Wright, if he were able to do this, would put himself into a really small category that would include only him, John Wooden, Mike Krzyzewski, Adolph Rupp, Roy Williams, Jim Calhoun, and Bob Knight.
I said this on the radio Tuesday. Jay Wright's a Hall of Fame coach and a legendary coach. If we are talking in the wee hours of Tuesday morning about this podcast, GP, about Villanova having won, Jay Wright is a coaching immortal. You get to three, that's coaching immortality.
I mean, and it could be three in a six-year span?
In a six-tournament span, yes.
Six-tournament span. I hate that.
I know. I almost didn't say it because I know you hate it.
No, but like we have to rephrase everything we say because of the stupid pandemic.
That's right. That's right.
So frustrating.
But he's knocking on the door of it. There's no doubt about it. It's wild. And if it's Carolina, then come on now. Hubert Davis is the first one to win a national championship in his first year as a head coach. That's got to be the case.
Steve Fisher?
Does that count?
He was coaching for the first time and won a national
championship. He didn't coach the whole season, though.
He coached the end of it.
He did coach the end of it. That's almost as annoying as the pandemic ruined the streak of the years, actually, to be frank. Steve Fisher should have been coaching from the start of that season or just not coached at all.
It's an awesome Final Four. If you don't think so, you're a weirdo. We'll talk about each national semifinal next. But first, come on, please be ready. A word from our sponsors.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. You've got the H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on those dirt trails and kick up some mud. Or the third row seating gets your whole family in to experience the thrill together. The dual wireless charging pads make sure that no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead cell phone. Think about those adventurous activities you can do, like me, taking a ski trip up with the family, maybe going on a camping expedition, anything and everything. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
So let's get into the actual Final Four games. We'll take them in the order that they're going to be played Saturday, 6:09 p.m. Eastern, Kansas-Villanova, TBS, KU, 4.5-point favorite, totals 133. Dead leg, I believe, feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe on CBS Sports HQ earlier this week, you said you were picking Kansas, but that you might change your mind as the week progresses. The week has progressed. Have you changed your mind?
I have not yet, but I maintain the right until Friday to change my mind. Right here, right now, I'm still going to go with Kansas. Ochai Agbaji, I think, is going to show up in this game and play pretty damn well. I'm actually curious to see how Remy Martin plays in this one. And David McCormick, you know, Eric Dixon, will the bigs factor in at all? I don't really know. I love the fact that this is a wonderful matchup from a coaching perspective. Not that just Bill Self and Jay Wright are incredible coaches, but from a tactician standpoint, they're also very, very good. And, you know, they also have certainly different styles. So to this point, Kansas has, you know, we talked about this on the previous podcast, but it's gotten a few breaks while Villanova's, you know, to a certain extent had to, you know, do this the hard way to a certain extent. And now it doesn't have Justin Moore. But as I also said on HQ, and I think I did say it on the podcast, I don't want to repeat myself too much, but I 100% believe it. I think that Villanova is as best equipped to overcome a significant injury as any team, if not more than any other team. I think if you think that Villanova doesn't have a chance to win this game because Justin Moore's not playing, you're not giving that program and Jay Wright and those players enough credit. It's not unthinkable, to be honest. And if you wanted to make a case that Villanova has a better chance to beat Kansas than Carolina does to beat Duke, I'm here to listen to your case. I'm not saying that's absolutely the scenario, but I'm here to listen to your case if you think that it is actually, you know, what's on the table, that Villanova can beat Kansas much more easily or more likely than UNC coming back and knocking off Duke there. So I will take Kansas to win in this one. As of now, as we sit here, what's our number? 4.5. What's this number?
4.5.
It is. I would take Villanova to cover, my man. I think it's just close enough. These teams did meet on this stage 4 years ago. Do you remember?
Not specifically, but I'm aware that that happened.
So the reason why I particularly remember this is this was the second game of the
okay. What?
No, just the way you said it. So Kansas and Oklahoma was the second game of that national semifinal. Remember, Michigan beat Loyola in the first game, and I think I went to like the Loyola locker room and got stuff for a column. I can't remember. But anyway, I was in there late. And so I actually, by the time I was walking back out to my seat, I actually left and was walking pretty much parallel to Bill Self as he was getting ready to go out and play against Villanova. And he had, you know, the head coach always goes out last. So he walked out by himself solo and he had, you know, he was like, "Hey, Matt." I was like, "Hey, Bill, you ready for this?" He's like, Oh, hell yeah. And do you remember what happened after that? Villanova absolutely roasted them.
By the way, that Villanova team was awesome.
Incredible,
like,
man.
Like one of the, you know, they had some injuries. No, we're not going to go down this path. But they had a few injuries and then they lost a few games in the Big East. And I think that sort of like made us think, yeah, they're a really good team, but like they're not all modern history, all time great. That team is all time great modern history.
Unquestionably. By the way, if you've not hit the like button, please do so. I assume we're giving out more Paramount Plus gift cards. I don't know. I mean,
I don't know either. Shouts to Commander King. He's one Commander of my King's, favorites.
He's staying
and
on.
Commander King. Me and Commander King, we've got an Instagram direct message relationship.
Okay, well,
that's my guy. And I appreciate him telling everybody to smash.
As far as I'm concerned, Nada can give the Paramount Plus card to him then. I mean,
yeah, give it to Commander. Smash the like button like Commander King says. Do it like Brandon Davies would.
One of my primary memories of this game was like Bill Self having a confidence about walking out and then Villanova just saying, "See ya. Good night. It ain't going to be your night." Villanova was amazing. They trounced KU in that semifinal on the way to winning, obviously, third national championship and second under Jay Wright. So intriguing that just 4 years later, obviously different rosters, same coaches, we get another semifinal rematch, this one being the undercard, of course, there. What are your thoughts on the matchup, GP, and what do you think will play out on Saturday?
Both teams enter on 9-game winning streak. So these teams have been playing well. I mean, I just think the problem to the extent, I mean, maybe it won't be a problem, but I'm anticipating it being a problem. Keep in mind, this is the same logic I used on Houston, and it never really worked out for me until they got all the way to the Elite Eight. But like, they just lost Justin Moore. He's their second leading scorer. He's their best perimeter defender. And Kansas can attack you from the perimeter three different spots, right? I mean, Remy Martin is now a factor. Ochai Agbaji, obviously. Christian Brown, like he could bounce it too, get out and transition and dunk on you. You know, Villanova just lost his best perimeter defender and they got to deal with that. I think that's a problem. I mentioned Remy Martin. He's now averaging 16.8 points per game in the NCAA tournament. It's like Kansas just added an all-conference player for its tournament run. Like if this were the NBA and it's like, ooh, this team was good enough to, you know, be a number one seed. And then they just traded for like an all-star. That's what Kansas has effectively done because Remy Martin was a non-factor most of the season. Now he's very much a factor. I'm assuming Villanova is going to go Colin Gillespie, Caleb Daniels, Brandon Slater, Eric Dixon, Jermaine Samuels.
Yeah.
Right. And so, I mean, they barely play anybody anyway. So now you're going to get Chris Archidiakono coming off the bench, Brian Antoine coming off the bench, and that's probably it. I mean, Jay's probably just going to play seven guys. I mean, he only played seven against Houston and he lost one of them. So, Antoine didn't play at all in the Elite Eight game. They're going to, you know, he's a former five-star prospect. Brian Hamilton had a nice column on him earlier today at The Athletic. You know, he's a former five-star prospect whose career has not gone the way five-star prospect careers are supposed to go. But perhaps this will be his shot because he's going to have, whether he's ready or not, he's going to have to get in this game at some point because Villanova was already, you know, playing a limited short rotation. And now one of those guys, one of the key guys is no longer a part of it. You know, Villanova, they don't have anybody in the front court taller than 6'8". McCormick 6'10". Jalen Wilson 6'8". I mean, Kansas is bigger and deeper. Now that sounds dirty, but it's true. Kansas is bigger and deeper, and I'm assuming that's going to be a problem for Villanova. But, you know, I would say this. I'm picking Kansas to win and cover, but, like, I'm not betting it. You know, count Villanova out at your own risk. It's still a proud program with an all-time great coach, a two-time Big East Player of the Year running things. They can still get this done.
They can. I, you know, a couple things on this game before we move on to the headliner. One, you know, I understand that Duke and Carolina is and should and will be getting much more attention than this game. I love this matchup. I actually really, really like this game. This is a one. The fact that Villanova, Kansas is the appetizer is incredible and speaks to the strength and appeal of this Final Four overall, because Villanova also, of the four schools here, it's the one that's really doesn't, you know, I understand why Duke has a hateable quality and has for so long. I understand why Carolina does just as much. And there are people outside of even the Duke fan base who will say that, because Carolina, yes, it is. It has a case as the greatest program in the history of the sport right there with Kentucky, as far as I'm concerned. And that's what the research bore out that I mentioned about 20 minutes ago. But there are plenty of people that don't like Carolina because, you know, the wine and cheese factor and all that kind of stuff. And it's just it's hoops royalty. And so it gets backlash on that. And then Kansas, similarly, for a number of different reasons with Kansas, one of them being like, you know, Kansas has long been so damn good that when you are that good in your conference for just year and decade and decade and decade, it will, you know, really give rise to people that get sick of you. I get all that. And then, frankly, the Kansas connection to the FBI scandal, where the weird backdrop to all this is that once this season's over, like, I fully anticipate Kansas to get absolutely slammed by the NCAA.
By the way, that is coming.
Like,
Kansas might win the national championship and they'd be banned from the 2023 NCAA yes. tournament. That's like very much on the table. In fact, some people would say it's more likely than not.
So that, and, you know, people think that Bill Self has a Teflon. I'm just telling you that reputation, I think, will be going by the wayside, because I do anticipate, like, they'll fight it, but I think that Bill Self is staring down a significant suspension whenever that punishment does come down, you know? So for all those reasons, Kansas obviously has its own enemies there. Villanova, like, what is there not to like about Villanova? Can anyone, like, they were in a conference, then they had to break off with the Catholic Seven to reform and keep the Big East name. They won as an underdog. They're still the lowest seeded program ever to win a national championship. They're the only program that can really claim to have quasi Cinderella status in a power conference while winning a national championship, which is what they did obviously in 85 when they beat Georgetown there. Jay Wright's as approachable and likable of a coach in a power conference that the sport has, period. So, you know, for the Villanova sect, I think it's the one that the true people that are going to watch this game that don't have a vested interest in, like, they want to see Coach K go out on top, or they'd love to see Carolina be able to do this in Hubert Davis's first season, or you're a fan of any of these programs, or Kansas. I feel like Villanova is actually weirdly the people's favorite in this one, because, again, there also is the feeling that it's like, is it a blue blood? Is it a not? And, like, maybe winning one more, whatever. But there is that factor to it. So I love this matchup. I think it has a great chance of being a really good, really close game, and not really knowing who's going to wind up stepping up in that moment. And the other aspect of this game, and I'll just be quick on this, and we'll have another podcast before the game's tip, and maybe I go deeper on it on that one. I just wonder if the Remy Martin experience, like, shows up in a good way or a not so good way, Parrish. He's been quite good over the course of four games, and the man certainly has had his amazing moments, tantalizing moments, frustrating moments over his career, just in terms of what he's done at Arizona State and at Kansas. How he's used, deployed, and how many shots he gets up, for good or for bad, I also think is the true X factor in this matchup.
So we're both taking Kansas to win the game. I'm taking Kansas to cover. You're taking Villanova plus the points. Put that in the Final Four and one.
Before we
get to Duke Carolina, let me remind you that the inaugural HBCU All-Star Game is going to tip off this weekend, this Sunday, on CBS and Paramount Plus. You can catch some of the nation's best HBCU men's basketball players as they go head-to-head. Going to be 4 p.m. Eastern. Make sure to tune in early for the HBCU All-Star pregame show. That's going to start at 3:30 Eastern, 2:30 Central, 3:30 Eastern on CBS. It's America's most watched network. The second game on Saturday, it's going to tip at approximately 8:50 p.m. Eastern on TBS. It's the headliner, Duke Carolina, for the first time ever in the NCAA tournament. Deadleg, are you brave enough? Are you brave enough to pick North Carolina?
I'm certainly brave enough. I don't know if I'm stupid enough. That's
the
question.
You think it would be stupid to pick North Carolina?
No, I'm just having a little fun here.
That is.
Listen, we are the first college basketball podcast that ever went to video. All right. And we are the college basketball podcast that broke the news that this is Mike Krzyzewski's final season. All right. We're also one of the few college, we might be the only college basketball podcast willing to talk about this game. Like, it doesn't feel like this game is getting any attention right now. It's Wednesday of Final Four week. It's about damn time we talked about Duke versus North Carolina. Question for you. Who is better served right now? Who's better served by the result that happened in the last game at Cameron? Which team?
Duke.
Why?
Because if what happened in Cameron didn't happen in Cameron, Duke would be 2-0 against North Carolina. And at risk of maybe saying we've already beat this team twice, you know, we're going to handle this again. No problem. But Carolina, not only beating Duke at Cameron, but smacking them around, I think Duke will now be more focused than they could possibly otherwise be. This is a game they wanted in the ACC tournament and then didn't get it, but they wanted it. Paolo Banchero, and we talked about this on a previous podcast. I can't remember if it was with you or with Kyle Boone, Strongjaw, maybe David Cobb. But, like, you never see this. You know, in a tournament setting, you know, a sideline reporter at the end of the game might ask, so it's either this or that. What do you prefer? And they say, we're just focused on us. We're just happy that we're good there, and we look forward to playing. And Paula was like, North Carolina. We want North Carolina.
I loved it.
I loved it, too. And then Virginia Tech beat North Carolina, and we didn't get that game. So I don't know if you saw it.
I did, and I love this even more.
It was great. Tracy Wolfson, the great Tracy Wolfson. So Duke wins its Elite Eight game over Arkansas, and Tracy says, hey, I got to ask. You know, it's North Carolina St. Peter's in the Elite Eight. Who would you rather play? And he said, you're not going to get me this time. And went from there, which I thought was perfect. But clearly, they wanted North Carolina, and now they get North Carolina, and I think they'll be focused for it. Could they be too focused, too hype? I mean, maybe, but this is the Final Four. You're going to be too hype anyway.
Yeah, so I there's a lot of fascinating angles to approach this game, having that game as backdrop. I was obviously there at Cameron Indoor, and I do think Duke is slightly in the better position psychologically with all this. Now, because it's easy to forget this part after the fact because Carolina won, but everyone listening, if you listen to podcasts, read CBSSports.com, Intake College Basketball Media, and you do it, you know, as part of your daily routine as a sports fan, you will remember this being the case. And I wrote about it at the time. A Duke Carolina game in the modern media landscape that we're in, there had never been a scenario where one of the teams playing in the game was reduced to an afterthought. And that's exactly what happened to North Carolina in that spot. It was, we kind of got to invite you here, scoot on over 8 miles up the road, get your 40 minutes in, take the L, head back home. Appreciate you coming. Thanks so much. And because of that, I actually think it really served UNC tremendously well. I also had detail in that column that night when they won, like Hubert Davis, the previous game, I can't remember if it was Clemson. I don't have the roster up. Maybe it was Wake. They had won a game. And then like the second Hubert Davis walked in the locker room, the next game was Duke. And it was like, no time to celebrate. Duke prep starts right here, right now, right here, right now. Cause they had kicked their ass the previous time. And all of that served Carolina well, kind of like sitting and hiding, you know, getting 3% of the media coverage leading up to that game. I think the fact that Duke went through all of that going up to the game, it was basically as big of a media event that you could ever have that's not in the Final Four. It was incredible how much attention all the media that descended upon Durham. Obviously, it had like a huge college football Saturday tailgate feel. You know, the players had to talk about it. Everyone knew, right? So I think that it actually serves Duke well that it's still going to be bigger here at the Final Four, but that they went through those motions, I think it actually does serve them well. As for the result, it's interesting. I think in terms of like the fans on each side of this, if you're a Duke fan, you're way more stressed on this. Like Carolina, I get it. You don't want to lose to Duke for the first time in the tournament on a Final Four stage. I understand that. Like, and a Duke win over UNC on a certain level, it does not erase what happened at the end of the regular season. It just doesn't. But if Duke could beat Carolina and then win the national championship, I mean, it's as much possible redemption as you could possibly ask for outside of like beating UNC in the ACC tournament, which just didn't happen, right? So I think if you're a fan of Duke, you're understandably, your anxiety levels are a bit higher. If you're Carolina, they're still there. But man, GP, it just feels like it's a bit of a house money situation. And if I'm UNC, even though we got to go in, we got to execute, we got to outplay Duke. Duke's played amazingly well. Carolina has as well. And it has under its belt the fact that the most recent time that these two teams played, we went into your house and we absolutely trounced you. We kicked you out of your own gym. So I think the actual, and I can't wait to see on Thursday and Friday how much that result is downplayed by everyone, even though you can't downplay it. Like the players are going to be like, eh, it's a whole new game. You know, that was that. This is this. That was then. This is now. I don't want to hear any of that. Carolina fans and those Carolina players know that they completely de-pants Duke in that game. And I think that does give them a little bit of an edge too. But I slightly give it to Duke because it has, you know, it's the one that gets to avenge the loss. They are 1-1. They are 1-1. Duke does have a win as well. But I think everything, you know, pertaining to the mind going into this and the minds, I think it's awesome. This is the biggest, I got to ask this on Radio GP, biggest national semifinal
ever.
Maybe ever. Or I kind of, now we were, I was too young. You were obviously, I think you were sophomore year of college. Duke going against undefeated UNLV the year after that one. Now that, and as a youngin, I remember loving that UNLV team, but I was 9-10 years old. That one feels like it's the only thing that's close. But to me, Duke UNC, first time ever, Coach K going out, this is the biggest national semi ever.
Maybe Duke UNLV is considered the biggest national semifinal because of the way it result, because of the result of it.
Right.
Not going into it, but because of the result of it. Whereas this is one that's going into it feels like it's as,
it's UNLV was undefeated. That's the only thing. So that was that did ratchet it up. We don't have an undefeated factor here.
I went through a lot of the Carolina stuff on a previous podcast, so I won't bore you with every detail again. But you know, after they lost to Wake Forest by 22, you know, they dropped to 12-6 overall. They had four losses by at least 17 points. They were down to 43rd at KenPom. They lost to Pitt on February 16th, dropped to 49th at KenPom. But since they lost to Wake, they're 16-3. Since they lost to Pitt on February 16th, they're 10-2. Check this out. I don't know if I've ever taught you this, but I will, you know, once we get to the offseason and things slow down. You can go to barttorvik.com and like put a start date and an end date and you know, look at data from two defined moments in time. And so if you go to February 17th, 2022, the day after Carolina lost to Pitt, and you run the data from this, from that point to this point in the season. And it's a 6-week sample size, by the way, not insignificant. 6-week sample size. Would this surprise you? UNC, according to barttorvik.com, over the past 6 weeks has been the 7th best team in the country. Duke has been the 11th, 4 spots below North Carolina. Be careful, dead leg. Be careful.
What number did you have for Carolina?
7th.
Well, would this surprise you? If you reduce
nothing would ever surprise me.
If you reduce that and go tournament only, Carolina's been the best team in the tournament. Number 1 in the country. Texas A&M number 2, by the way. Texas A&M in the NIT title game.
Hey, I tell you, if Buzz is going to go on a rant about getting left out of the NCAA tournament, it's working out. Like this is
it's working.
This is what you got to do.
It's working. But yeah, Carolina is number 1 in the past 2 weeks in all of men's college basketball efficiency standpoint. Amazing. Amazing. I'm getting clapbacks saying if I misstated, I'm going to be clear on this. I am not saying that the last game at Cameron was bigger than Duke versus UNC in the national semifinals. I said it was as big of an environment, not in a Final Four in the regular season, as you could possibly ever have. And that's factual. That's true. There had never been a regular season game with more hype, attention, anticipation than K's last home game, and it happened against Carolina. But it's not bigger than this game.
You haven't been talking publicly long enough. I learned a long time ago.
It's been 10 years.
It is wild how often people can listen to you say something and just totally misrepresent it or misquote. It happens to me every, I used to get people sending me stuff like GP, like I used to have like prominent people call me and be like, GP, man, I heard what you said and blah, 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 blah. And I'd say, I didn't say that. That's not what I said. Well, that's what I heard you said. Well, did you actually hear it? Well, no, somebody told me. Well, please go back and listen, and then you'll see that that person lied to you. Not intentionally, so maybe it wasn't a lie, but they misrepresented the point that I was making.
Understood. I'm going to take Duke to win. I'm leaning Duke to win, Duke to cover. I can be talked off that, but I don't know if I will be. I've also been influenced here by the fact that I've seen every single Duke second in person since the Carolina loss, all the ACC tournament games, and then everything through the NCAA tournament, shooting 54% from the field. And I mentioned this on the hit I did with GP on HQ. It's the fact that Duke has consistently gotten good games out of every single player that matters. There hasn't been a guy who hasn't been picking up his end of the bargain. Everyone is producing, particularly at the offensive end, but even defensively, Duke has been able to turn it on. And it's because of that that I'm going to, you know, I'm going to take Duke to win the game. I'd love to be wrong. If you tell me North Carolina beats Duke, I will be wrong. And I'm not saying that it can't happen. It absolutely can. If ever there was an opportunity for throw out the record books, yada, 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 it would be this kind of game. And Hubert Davis ending Coach K's career. His career is on the line in this game. And the fact that it's Duke UNC is just, it's utterly phenomenal, man. I feel this is going to sound, you know, cliche. GP, I feel blessed that we get to cover this thing. These are the glory days, okay? Right now, right here.
Right now?
Oh, these are the glory days.
I felt like my glory days were clearly behind me.
No. We're getting Duke, Carolina in a Final Four, and Kansas, Villanova is the other one, man. This is awesome.
Oh, wow.
Incredible.
I thought it was over for me. But
it's not over.
You're saying I'm experiencing my glory days right now.
Yeah. What's that shirt, by the way? I can't read. What's the top of that say?
It says more.
More is possible.
More is possible.
That's, and at this Final Four, more is very much possible there. Very much possible. So I will take Duke to win. Again, we'll break down some more of this. Hey, maybe I changed my mind before Saturday. I don't think I'm changing it on this. But I do wonder if, you know, because Duke's going to be overwhelmingly picked to win. I'll be interested to see who does pick Carolina straight up to win this one. Because UNC will obviously have plenty of motivation to prove the haters and the doubters wrong yet again. But everyone's on the ground here. All the teams are here. Saturday it'll be here before you know it, but it feels like a little bit of a long walk before we get there. GP,
I can't show you the back of the shirt because we got to get going here pretty soon, but on the back it says on your first date, long before you ever get married, and then it says more is possible.
Okay, there we have it.
You don't have to wait, more is possible tonight. I did get some hypothetical future lines on the national title game from BetOnline AG earlier today.
Before you say this, I believe on the last podcast I told you Duke should and would be the favorite to win the national championship, and you said it would be Kansas.
That's true.
Okay.
I was wrong. You were right.
Oh, I don't have it. I should have it queued up. Okay, hold on.
But what I'm about to hit you with might put a wrench into things.
I was wrong. I know. That's why I saw your tweet, but yeah, go ahead.
So if it ends up being Kansas against Duke in the title game, which is what, you know, that's the most likely of the possibilities. That's the most likely one.
Come on, Duke.
According to BetOnline AG. Now, listen, other places it might be different. This is strictly according to them. This ain't GP's numbers. This is BetOnline AG. Kansas would be a 1-point favorite over Duke. If it's Kansas, North Carolina, Kansas would be a 5-point favorite over North Carolina. If it ends up being Duke, Villanova, Duke would be a 3.5-point favorite over Jay Wright's Wildcats. And if it is Villanova, North Carolina in the title game, Villanova would be a 1.5-point favorite over North Carolina. So I recognize that in the betting markets right now, Duke is a slight favorite to win this title above Kansas. But according to BetOnline AG, if Duke, Kansas play on Monday night, they would post Kansas as a 1-point favorite.
Let's go, Duke. Come on.
I mean, I got to wear out the soundboard over the next few days. Like, can we acknowledge again? Just this is incredible.
Let's go, Duke. Come on.
This was Mike Krzyzewski trying to drum up and dream up new chants. Remember when that happened? First of all, the fan base was belovedly like saying, Capel, you're our guy. Come sit with us, Capel. And like in an endearing way, he scolds the hell out of him. Remember that mid game, he stares him down. You got these Duke freshmen, these trust fund kids who don't even know how to react. They don't know what to do. They've never been looked at like this in their entire life. And like, then after the game, he's all ticked off on that. Let's think of a new chair. Incredible.
There's like this cliche about old people getting irrationally mad about nothing. And yet he does it all the time.
Defense.
Did you see it the other night when they were doing the post-game interview and Tracy was talking to Mike and Paulo was like, and when maybe Wendell was right, they were right behind him. And Paulo was like, this the goat, this the goat.
Yeah.
And Kay turned around and he was like, shut up. He's constantly telling people to shut up.
Oh, man. And yet on that note, I will say, because I asked Kay about this in San Francisco, I will say that he has appeared to be fairly as loose as he possibly could be and really soaking this all in. This was extremely palpable in Greenville in particular. San Francisco, yes, but Greenville, especially there where, you know, he's kind of like, all right, I got to really, you know, take a look around and soak this all in because I'm not going to get to experience this again. So we will, we'll see if it ends on Saturday or not. It's an incredible thing either way. Either he's going to the title game in his last year, are you kidding me? Or you've got Carolina with the all-time walk-off, man. There is no coming back from that if you're a Duke fan. It doesn't matter if you win the next four national championships under John Shire. If Carolina and Hubert Davis can say they beat you at Kay's final home game, and then they booted you out of the Final Four in the first time you ever met in the tournament, and that was Kay's last game, Kay might have to unretire. I mean, I don't know if he can actually go out like that. He might have to be like, it's not over for me. I got to pull a Brady here. It's not over for me. I don't know. We'll wait and see on it. I can't wait. So we got, before you wrap here, GP, so you're about to head down to New Orleans. We cannot wait for you to get down here. When are we seeing you again on this podcast, though? That's the question. I mean,
we have a long email chain discussing this.
I
don't know that it's been settled yet. Basically, we'll just be transparent. Here's the deal. Ask the people what they want. Let the people decide. So there's a window on Thursday.
Yeah.
So that we could do the Iron College Basketball Podcast live from the CBS Sports HQ set. But the window is from 4:30 Central to 5 o'clock Central. It's got to be in those 30 minutes. I can't be there. I have a production meeting that's going to last probably to at least 6 o'clock. I can't be there. So the options are Iron College Basketball Podcast without me, but on the HQ set from 4:30 to 5, or if you can wait till 6:30.
I got stuff. I can't do it. Listen, if you want to go, there will be a Friday pod. The question is whether we do a Thursday one, because I can't do one later. That's the thing. I have other things that I need to tend to work-wise, writing-wise.
What do you have to tend to work-wise Thursday at 6:30?
Writing-wise, work-wise, and then, you know.
You're trying to go out.
I might actually need to meet people, but yes. Yes.
Yeah, okay, you're putting people before the podcast.
I'm not putting people. You're putting people before the podcast.
I'm putting a work meeting before the podcast. I'm not putting dinner or party or people before the podcast.
There's no parties that early. It's nothing like that. It might be a little tricky.
There is no late night. Somebody saying late night pod on Thursday. There is no like.
Do you understand how shot that is?
Do you know what late nights at the Final Four on Thursday look like?
Do you realize how much of a no shot that is?
Yeah, that's.
Now, there is a Friday. There is a Friday morning podcast from the HQ set
that I also 100% cannot do that.
That Parrish can't get to, but they want us to do one from the HQ set. So that Friday morning will be me and Boone. That will be from the HQ set in the morning. They want to do the HQ one. So Strongjaw will be there. GP, listen, he's the king of CBS Sports Network. That's the other thing. There's a lot of stuff going on right now.
Who had odds on Norlander saying he can't do the pod at 6:30 because he's got to get to the bar?
That's not where I'm going.
That sounds like something I would say.
Not what I'm doing. It's not what I'm doing. But there are things to tend to.
Things to tend to. I've got things to tend to.
All right, here's the deal. We also covered a lot here. And if this is the first time you're listening to the pod, you're catching us in normal form. I won't even say this is rare form. We'll have a maybe on a Thursday pod. You'll definitely get a Friday pod. That's 100% happening. And then, you know, we'll have Saturday reaction, Sunday. We got plenty of these coming to you, but Thursday might just be a bit trickier than we thought.
Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Wendell Mitchell, 6'3 legend. Averaged 2.9 points, 25 games for Baylor in the 2016-17 season. Then transferred to Texas A&M. Shouts to Larnell. Thank you guys once again for listening to Iron College Basketball Podcast in the middle of the dumbest pandemic of my lifetime. Woo! I never seen one.
I got one more thing before we get out of here. This will be fast. I wanted to bring this up. Last thing. Eric Church. You're a big Eric Church fan. He canceled his concert.
Yeah. I'm aware that Eric Church exists. I'm not a fan.
Huge. I mean, huge Church guy here. No doubt about it. In all facets, GP. I got to give a shout to Darren Vaught. He said the most North Carolina thing about this is the fact that Eric Church went to App State and he's canceling his concert for Duke Carolina, which speaks to the very nature of that rivalry. But I, at least, music guy, wanted to bring it up because it is actually kind of wild. Dude's a massively successful music star and is not playing a show because he's got to watch Duke Carolina. That's kind of wild.
He was supposed to play in San Antonio Saturday night and he just said, you know what? We're canceling the show.
There's significant legal drawbacks from this, by the way. I don't even know how that's working. He's transparently telling you, I got to watch the game. I'm not playing the show. I don't know how they handle that. It's fascinating.
You didn't even try to say, I've got family issues or there's a family emergency or, his drummer didn't pass away. He just said, I'm going to go watch a basketball game in New Orleans.
I love that energy, though. I absolutely love it. That's the Eric Church.
If you're not subscribed, please go subscribe anywhere you subscribe to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. 5 stars, nice review. Don't ever forget. Don't let them trick you. There's more of us than there are of them. If you're on YouTube, smash that like button. If you haven't subscribed yet to the YouTube channel, please knock that out. We're going to talk to you again real soon in some form. Till then, take care.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.